Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
I'm John Batzer, joining in with Professor John Cochrane of the Hoover Institution, who tells me there's a lively debate among economists and soldiers on the campus at Stanford as to whether economies can be marshaled the way militaries can be marshaled, whether they can work together, whether the contest we're witnessing now between the United States and China, which is expanding to the whole planet, I believe, whether that can result in a successful outcome or whether it's a prelude to kinetic action. Don't know. However, John, you pointed to Chips and Luis Garicano, I hope I say that correctly.
Yes.
Trading with bullies. It's charming. And I read the setup. Private companies decide whether to source chips from Taiwan or produce them at home. Choices that have strategic implications beyond their commercial calculations. National security externality exists because private actors do not account for how their decisions affect the government's bargaining power through resilience to conflict. When a U.S. company imports cheap Chinese chips and builds infrastructure dependent on them, it creates a strategic vulnerability, a cost not reflected in market prices. I take all this because it's a real example, although we could reverse it a little bit and say our chips are going to China. Through black markets, other means, back doors, Singapore. These are economic products, a microchip of great art. They're actually made in Taiwan for an American company, NVIDIA, on machines that are built by ASML in Europe. They're a combination of geniuses. But are they also part of a warfare situation, an economic warfare? How to regard them?
Yeah, and I think this is where I think we're having a productive conversation. McMaster and company were quite good in recognizing that you have to keep alive the goose that lays these golden eggs, that in the end, we have to preserve free markets, innovation, competition in the U.S. The government can't run everything. And if you want to have a strategic economic competition with China, I'm not quite sure what that means, but if you want to have that, the right answer is we have to be better. We cannot just protect all of U.S. and have a stagnant, protected, go our own way. China's going to clean our clocks if we do that. But what's the limiting principle? Where do you protect and where do you allow freedom? Because wrapping stuff in the flag is all too easy. In my youth, I worked on a national security trade case where the goose down industry said, well, under national security, we have to protect our imports against that cheap Chinese goose down because we wouldn't, our boys fighting the Ruskies up in Canada, we wouldn't want them to have inferior Chinese goose down. Now, you can tell how ridiculous that is, but that is what infuses. So anyway, back to Luis had a wonderful essay because he helped provide a limiting principle. Now you might view it as an excuse for intervention, but at least it says, when you say here's a reason to intervene, that helps you to say, well, when might you not intervene? So a reason to intervene is in a specific, well-delineated national security scenario, you might run short of specific kinds of chips and private industry might not locate those chips in the U.S. because that's more expensive. So that gives you a reason to want to spend some taxpayer money making sure you have that production capacity in the U.S. for time of need. That's a very limited thing. That doesn't mean we're going to protect the whole chip industry and make sure that's the American industry of the future. No, we're going to have enough so that we can build new F-35s and defend the old ones in time of need. Because that's the, in a war, we might need F-35s. And if you're doing other things, then you have others. So giving you a economic reason why there might not be the incentive you need and out the insistence, outline a specific scenario where you might need this. And I would add, put it on the defense budget because that's what we're doing. You're building aircraft carriers are expensive. You're building those because you might need them in a specific time. Okay, chip plants are like aircraft carriers. That gives you a limiting principle, a way to think about this other than just the economist says, free trade, freedom, and the national security person says, no, no, America must build and you'd be strong.
The puzzle for me, watching the markets, especially right now about these super chips that NVIDIA is said to be all by itself producing and other applications of AI. The puzzle for me is this is restricting genius. And genius is private. It's not state. And it comes from the unexpected. You don't pick winners if you're a state is my understanding. I've been taught that. And therefore, by restricting in any direction, the highest high end, that's what's going on here. You do two things. One, you guarantee that the adversary is going to acquire it because there are many means to get the golden ring. And the second is that you put limits on your own geniuses. You've tied them up in knots. You've partitioned them off, and they're not growing. So I know that I sound like a free trader. I'm not really. I'm just trying to apply the lessons that I've learned from economy. Private enterprise is the driver of the growth of the planet, not state enterprise.
That's right. Well, becoming a free trader is simply looking at the lessons of history and drawing the right conclusions. Chips are a global market. Even the U.S. is too small. You know, as you said, AMSL, the only company that knows how to build the chip machines is located in the Netherlands. And NVIDIA is a great example because it's the new darling of high-end chips. But yes. Remember, NVIDIA started making chips for computer games.
Right.
And it turned out that chips that are very good at doing every pixel at the same time on a screen turn out to be really good for training AI. But nobody knew that at the time. So nobody's government industrial policy fund the new innovators of the future would have ever picked NVIDIA. They're a stupid company making video game chips. Who needs that stuff? We need, supercomputers or something else. And you also point out the dangers of export restrictions. When we say, well, we don't want China accessing these chips, then we say to China, well, then you bloody well better learn to make your own quickly. Maybe it would be better if they could have to use our chips and become dependent on us, because we want to deter a war. We are hopefully not yet fighting a war. When you're fighting a war, you want to destroy the adversary no matter how much it hurts you. I think we are still at the point we want China to see it is very much to your advantage to stay part of the global trading system. And please, if you invade Taiwan, that's going to cost you something tremendous, as opposed to give them every incentive to learn to hang out on their own. And then they don't care what if we cut them off from global trade.
Isn't that what's going on right now, that they're doing two things? There's economic statecraft, as we discussed, but there's also enticing China to join in the world scale development of AI, knowing that that's the next phase of American genius. And
I don't think U.S. is doing much enticing China. China's enticed all on its own. You can see this is the next great thing. And like DeepSeek, they're perfectly smart enough to figure out they need to do this. I think we're doing a lot of, I think economic statecraft was HR's one, McMaster's wonderful effort to put some intellectual coherence onto kind of an incoherent be mean to China and be mean to all sorts of our trading partners strategy and a desire to do industrial policy. There's sorts of answers in search of questions out here in terms of tariffs, industrial policies, export controls, trade policies. And he wanted to put some coherent structure on it. And I think Luis also helps us to put some coherent structure on it. Let's hope it gets more coherent.
Help me understand this one sentence. The problem of national security is therefore often not about the application of force, but the exploitation of potential force. It's a citation from 1960. What does that mean in case of we're talking about high-end chips? What does that mean, John?
Yeah, this was a very beautiful point that Luis, who's a spectacular economic theorist, pointed out. What you want is deterrence, and deterrence means to show the other guy, speak softly and carry a big stick, as Teddy Roosevelt said. You want to see that you're carrying a big stick. You want to be able to get through a war, and then the other side sees that you have that resilience and doesn't start the war in the first place. And so your resilience is not something that you hope to ever use, sort of like nuclear weapons, but it's something that's there and helping your bargaining position. And that's especially hard to get markets to provide. Markets are unlikely to say, well, I'm going to do something costly because it gives you a better bargaining position for something that we're never actually going to use because hopefully a bargain comes out well.
And therefore, by restricting the access to the highest end production, we've intimidated China? I don't think so. They don't act that way.
No, I think that was an argument for doing things like building expensive chip plants in the U.S. Rather, and, you know, importing, having some production capacity in the U.S. But again, this tends to get wrapped in the flag and far too generalized. So, you know, China provides all our batteries. So, there's a problem. You know, in a war, who's going to, you know, replace the battery on your Tesla? Well, in a war, you want the batteries on the F-35s to work, but it's not obvious that you need to have fresh batteries for every Tesla for the, you know, period of war. So you don't want to just nationalize your whole industry because someday there might be some vague conflict with someone. You want to have very specific and limited interventions.
John Cochran, professor of economics at Stanford University and esteemed member of the Hoover Institution as a fellow. His Grumpy Economist contains both these presentations, Battling with Bullies by Louis Garicano and Mr. McMaster and Mr. Groot's piece on economic statecraft.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Did you know using your browser in incognito mode doesn't actually protect your privacy? Take back your privacy with IPVanish VPN. Just one tap and all your data, passwords, communications, browsing history, and more will be instantly protected. IPVanish makes you virtually invisible online. Use IPVanish on all your devices, anytime you go online at home and especially on public Wi-Fi. Get IPVanish now for 70% off a yearly plan with this exclusive offer at IPVanish.com/audio.